This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome, everybody. Today, we're continuing on Book 11. And how would you like to do that today, Carolyn?
Well, I liked what you suggested of just reading through and until the end. So this is a bit of a longish chapter. And then seeing what arises from all this beautiful language of Dharma washing through us this morning. And as far as the actual reading, I'm not sure exactly what you had in mind, but I think maybe it was you and I would share it.
Would you like to read a page and then I'll read a page or something like that? Okay.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to start if you like.
Okay. Let me get the share screen going. I'm using the PDF. And I'm just cursoring down as we're reading, okay?
Thank you. Seeing a group of people, they should wish that all beings expound the most profound teaching, that all be harmoniously united. If they see a big tree, they should wish that all beings divorce egotistic contentiousness and be free of anger and resentment. If they see a grove, they should wish that all beings be worthy of the respect of celestials and humans. If they see high mountains, they should wish that all beings' roots of goodness stand out, their peak beyond anyone's reach. If they see thorny trees, they should wish that all beings may quickly cut away the thorns of the three poisons. Seeing trees with luxuriant foliage, they should wish that all beings make a canopy of light with stability and liberation. If they see flowers blooming, they should wish that all beings' mystical, spiritual powers be like blossoming flowers. If they see blossoms on trees, they should wish that all beings' features be like flowers with all marks of distinction. If they see fruits, they should wish that all beings attain the supreme teaching and realize the way of enlightenment.
If they see a big river, they should wish that all beings gain entry into the stream of truth and enter the ocean of Buddha knowledge. If they see a reservoir, they should wish that all beings quickly awaken to the truth of the oneness of the Buddhas. If they see a pond, they should wish that all beings be fully accomplished in speech and be skillful in preaching. If they see a well, they should wish that all beings have full powers of elucidation to explain all things. If they see a spring, they should wish that all beings' skill in means increases and that good roots be inexhaustible. If they see a bridge, they should wish that all beings carry all across to freedom like a bridge. If they see a flower, if they see flowing water, they should wish that all beings develop wholesome will and wash away the stains of delusion. Seeing a garden cultivated, They should wish that all beings in the garden of sense desires clear away the weeds of craving. Seeing a forest of sorrowless trees, they should wish that all beings forever divorce greed and lust and not produce anxiety and fear.
If they see a park, they should wish that all beings diligently cultivate the practices leading to Buddha's enlightenment. Seeing people wearing ornaments, they should wish that all beings be adorned with a Buddha's 32 marks of distinction. Seeing the unadorned, they should wish that all beings give up decorations and practice austerity. Seeing people attached to pleasure, they should wish that all beings delight themselves with truth, not abandoning love for it. Seeing the unattached, they should wish that all beings have no care in their minds for fabricated things. Seeing happy people, they should wish that all beings always be peaceful and happy, gladly supporting the Buddhas. Seeing people suffer, they should wish that all beings attain fundamental knowledge and eliminate all misery. Seeing people with no maladies, they should wish that all beings enter true wisdom and never have sickness or afflictions. Seeing people sick, they should wish that all beings know the body is empty and null, and divorce opposition and conflict.
Seeing handsome people, they should wish that all beings always have pure faith in the enlightened and enlightening ones. Seeing ugly people, they should wish that all beings not become attached to anything not good. Seeing grateful people, they should wish that all beings be able to know the blessings of the Buddhas and enlightening beings. Seeing ungrateful people, they should wish that all beings not increase the punishment of those who are bad. If they see mendicants, they should wish that all beings be harmonious and tranquil, ultimately conquering themselves. Seeing Brahmins, they should wish that all beings always maintain pure conduct, getting rid of all evil. Seeing ascetics, they should wish that all beings be austere, by austere practices, reach the ultimate state. Seeing self-disciplined people, they should wish that all beings strongly maintain their will in practice and not give up the Buddha's path. Seeing people wearing armor, they should wish that all beings always wear the armor of virtue, heading for the teacherless state.
Seeing the unarmed, they should wish that all beings be forever rid of all doings that are not good. Seeing people debate, they should wish that all beings be able to refute all erroneous doctrines. Seeing people of proper livelihood, they should wish that all beings succeed in pure livelihood without improper behavior. If they see a king, they should wish that all beings be become kings of truth, always expounding the right teaching. If they see a prince, they should wish that all beings be reborn from the truth and be children of Buddha. If they see an elder, they should wish that all beings be able to clearly cut off and not practice evil ways. If they see a great minister, they should wish that all beings always maintain right mindfulness and practice all virtues. If they see a castle, they should wish that all beings gain strong and firm bodies and indefatigable minds. If they see a capital, they should wish that all beings collect all virtuous qualities and always be joyful and blissful.
Seeing someone in a forest, they should wish that all beings be worthy of praise and honor of celestials and humans. Entering a village to beg, they should wish that all beings enter the profound realm of truth, their minds without impediment. Coming to someone's door, they should wish that all beings enter into all doors of Buddha's teachings. Having entered a house, they should wish that all beings might enter the vehicle of Buddhahood, which is equal in all times. Seeing someone who doesn't give, they should wish that all beings never, ever give up supremely virtuous ways. Seeing those who give, they should wish that all beings forever abandon the three evil paths and their miseries. If they see an empty bowl, they should wish that all beings be pure of heart and empty of afflictions. If they see a full bowl, they should wish that all beings completely fulfill all virtuous ways. If they receive respect, they should wish that all beings respectfully practice all the Buddha's teachings.
If they get no respect, they should wish that all beings not act in any ways that are not good. Seeing people with conscience, they should wish that all beings act with discretion and cover their organs. Seeing the shameless, they should wish that all beings give up shamelessness and abide in the way of kindness. If they get fine food, they should wish that all beings should fulfill their aspirations and be free from envy and longing. If they get poor food, they should wish that all beings should not fail to obtain the taste of all meditations. Getting soft food, they should wish that all beings be imbued with compassion, their minds becoming gentle. Getting coarse, dry food, they should wish that all beings have no attachments and cut off mundane craving. When they eat, they should wish that all beings feed on the joy of meditation and be sated by delight in truth. When tasting flavor, they should wish that all beings attain the supreme savor of Buddhahood and be filled with the elixir of immortality.
When the meal is finished, they should wish that all beings accomplish all their tasks and fulfill the Buddha's teachings. When they explain the teaching, they should wish that all beings attain inexhaustible eloquence and widely expound the essentials of the teaching. When they leave a place, they should wish that all beings deeply enter enlightened knowledge, forever leaving the triple world. When they enter a bath, they should wish that all beings enter omniscient knowledge, knowing past, present, and future are equal. When washing their bodies, they should wish that all beings be undefiled in body and mind, radiantly pure inside and out. In the blistering heat of the day, they should wish that all beings cast off myriad afflictions, putting an end to them all. When the heat subsides and begins to cool, they should wish that all beings experience the highest truth and be ultimately cool. When reciting scripture, they should wish that all beings accord with the Buddha's teaching, remembering without forgetting. If they get to see a Buddha, they should wish that all beings be all like universally good, handsome and well adorned.
When seeing a Buddha's tomb, they should wish that all beings be honored as the shrine and receive the offerings of celestials and humans. Reverently gazing at the shrine, they should wish that all beings be looked up to by all celestials and humans. Bowing their heads to the shrine, they should wish that all beings be exalted beyond the view of gods and men. Circumambulating the shrine, they should wish that all beings act without offense and develop omniscience. Circling the shrine thrice, they should wish that all beings diligently see the Buddha's path without indolence of mind. Praising the Buddha's virtues, they should wish that all beings fulfill all virtues, extolled endlessly. Praising the Buddha's distinguishing marks, they should wish that all beings develop the Buddha body and realize formless truth. When washing their feet, they should wish that all beings fulfill the bases of spiritual powers, unhindered wherever they go. When going to sleep at night, they should wish that all beings attain physical ease and undisturbed minds.
Awakening from sleep, they should wish that all beings awaken omniscience, perceiving in all directions. Children of Buddha, if enlightening beings use their minds in this way, they will attain all supremely wonderful qualities which cannot be dislodged by any gods, demons, monks, Brahmins, Gandharvas, Titans, etc., or by any Buddhist followers or self-enlightened ones.
So I think, Doug, that it's the case that anyone can speak if they unmute themselves. So if anyone feels moved, please feel invited.
So I see these are like several situations, whatever we come across, this sutra says about wishing good to everyone based on whatever we encounter at that point of time. Whether it is good or bad, we try to convert it into something that is and wish good to all beings and learn from whatever it is, whether it is someone who doesn't give, we wish that they, like all people, and don't give up good qualities. Similar to that, they're different things. So it looks like this, though practically not possible to generally remember exactly what all these things are and then do that. But in general, the one practical thing, I mean, that is like doing metta, passing metta in our daily practice, where we wish that all beings are free of suffering, they're free of hatred and enmity, and they're also free of, and they're healthy and living in peace. So are there any other practices like that, which we can incorporate in our daily practice?
Thank you for bringing in the metta practice. That's really a part of this this particular book, I feel, in my view. And so the whole amazing sutra, Avatamsaka, covers really all of Buddhism. It has integrated and made a new flower garland ornament sutra of the very earliest teachings all the way through. And the metta practice is really present in here for me as well. And I think inclining the mind in any way toward the wholesome is what we are encouraged and given very many examples to do. So there are different ways to do metta practice, and one way would be to make it in one's own life. As you walk down the street, every being that you encounter, and so that is keeping your mind on the wholesome and the well-wishing for others, and away from the self-centeredness, which is very, which we have to have that balance of being ourselves and in ourselves and being ourselves and doing our lives and living our lives, but also with that more expansive sense of seeing others not separate from self. So it's very helpful, I've found, to dedicate whatever task or wherever you are in life, in your work or home life or going to run errands, every being that you encounter. And as this section points to so beautifully, that can be a being, can be any tree, flower, also in other sections, it can be creatures, insects, birds. Birds are very big in the Avatamsaka Sutra, but any being, and also any constructed thing, the castle, but any, sometimes a stop sign, you know, some workers on the road. So that's one way I could say that I see that where the metta practice can be really very strong for oneself as well as for others.
Thank you.
An example of that metta practice. Some of you, maybe many of you, know Ben Myers, who has MS. And so he's mostly bound to a wheelchair. He lives off a middle field, just off middle field in Palo Alto. And he rolled his wheelchair out there one day. And as cars drove by, the speed limit's 25 miles an hour, so they're not racing by. He did 108 bows in each direction to 108 cars one direction and 108 in the other direction. Just that offering, that was, it just felt wonderful to me to hear that from him.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
I think two of the precepts. Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for the reading, Doug and Carolyn. And Mahesh, I don't know if you're familiar with learning the precepts. Is I think of self-cultivation. So the precepts is one thing that's really important. And then, of course, that leads to Jukai, but also the paramitas, which also, of course, are moral and ethical foundation. And once we cultivate, you know, for our mind's cultivation, then we are more apt to share it and maybe notice it and desire it for everybody. So those two things just came up. Just wanted to share them.
Thank you so much for this beautiful poetry. And it's kind of like a storehouse that you could return to, you know, when I can return to when I notice that I'm, you know, judging something that is out of kilter and I have my habitual response of anger or, you know, whatever it might be, to be able to kind of review these things. Like you said, I mean, the precepts too are just these wonderful kind of cones in the road. And we can retrain our minds in this way, you know, towards a wholesomeness, I think is the key, but it's really a discipline that, you know, we can do, we can incorporate in ritual, certainly, you know, at our sanghas, in our sanghas, and perhaps as we wake up in the morning or go to bed at night, maybe little pieces and parts of it that kind of seed our storehouse consciousness a little bit and maybe even give us favorable, you know, dreams. And I just wanted to share kind of a very mundane way of applying this, which I've shared before, but it's, you know, when I'm driving and there's a lot of, you know, people that I have a very visceral judgment of their driving capabilities. And instead of saying the curse word that I would normally label them as, I've really tried to do this strange paradoxical act of saying, I love you. And the weird thing about it is, if you try it, I hardly recommend it. When I've tried this, when I've done this, it is very difficult to maintain the righteousness of self, you know, the self-righteousness of the anger of this person. I love you. It's very incongruous, of course, but anyway, it might be one of those things like that wakes me up. And anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Taizan.
John?
Thank you for these readings, and also Carolyn for articulating it as meta practice. That's very helpful. I need a little bit of help with one of the verses in particular, many of them, of course, but one that I made a note about that seeing people suffer, they should wish that all beings attain fundamental knowledge and eliminate all misery. We're all aware of so many people suffering. We can hardly not see suffering. This instructs us that we should wish that all beings attain fundamental knowledge. Would you talk a little bit about fundamental knowledge as it appears here in this verse? What is it that we're wishing that people attain?
Thank you, John, for bringing that particular verse up. That verse is also one that that I noted, and partly because it's a very specific and also a very human relational example of this whole form of wishing well-being. Two things come to mind about that. The first, before the fundamental knowledge, is that the wishing in metta practice, in well wishing, is an embodied well wishing. It's not just going through the verses or memorizing them or having it become as is so much our tendency of habit. That's just the way we're designed as humans. That's the way we build up being full humans so that we can see the fullness of Wayan, the four interdependent situations. But we are built that way. So it's embodying that knowledge, knowing what the larger picture is, the full knowledge of what we are as human beings. And fundamentally in that, I think particularly in this verse, that we are not separate from all other human beings, that their suffering, and many poets and great writers and philosophers from other traditions as well, not just Zen and Buddhism, have brought this to our attention, that we are not separate, that this, so attaining the knowledge, the full knowledge, as I understand it, is realizing that we are not separate selves. And that also, I mean, you could say also it folds in the three characteristics that there is suffering. Just even acknowledging the suffering in the world today, we see in our own little segment of the political world in this nation, we see people don't even want to acknowledge that there is suffering. Acknowledging the suffering, and knowing that things change, that you're not stuck in the suffering. You don't have to be with the knowledge that there is a bigger picture and that you are not separate. So I hope this has somewhat addressed your question. And if you have further questions.
Thank you.
Question. Maybe she can hear me. Can you hear me from there? In the reading this morning, it mentioned the Buddha's distinguishing marks. I don't know what that means exactly. Distinguishing marks.
Doug, do you want to talk about distinguishing marks?
Well, there are 32 of them, from the top knot to there are all these markings that distinguish the Buddha. That's what I'm aware of. And it seems like I haven't reviewed the marks recently, but it seems as though there's something very few of us have.
It's an interesting part of Buddhism. From at least, I'm going to get a little historical here, because the distinguishing marks have that resonance for me. When Buddhism, very, very early Buddhism, there were only stupas. There was kind of an unwritten code, even pre-literate Buddhism, I'm talking. So before anything was written down. And there were just stupas. And there were some very beautiful, but plain and beautiful carved granite and different stones. But then there became, as a way, because humans are also this imagery, and then language itself, which has different forms in image and sound, became clear as the teaching spread that a lot of people needed a little something to hook onto, to kind of let it get into them, so that it came into their bodies, really, through their eyes and their ears. So the Buddhas were, I've seen these statues in India, many of them, and other places there, they have, yeah, from the top knot to the long ears and to the hands and the marks on the hands and the feet, and the limbs are a certain size, and the body has a certain, you know, bearing, and that has to related to the body, like the Greek statues. But a big characteristic is a kind of a luminosity that the Buddha has. And the way I interpret that for us followers, or us and less lay people, is who are not Buddhas, but Buddha followers, that I interpret it as presence, as embodied presence, as when we are really with whatever is arising in that moment. That to me is a mark, but it's not a historical mark.
Thank you.
Nato.
So that leads me to consider the fact that this presence is itself a form of metta, and that there may be something that occurs before the wish, before the wishing, and what occurs before the wishing is the presence to the empty bowl, the wonderful sorrowless trees, you know, to a pond, that even before the wish takes form, there is an offering being made there, and it's the offering of one's attention, the noticing of the bowl, the very noticing of all of these myriad things that then are followed by a wish. So there's something even for me, a kind of fuller experience to this particular book than, and these series of wishes and metta offerings. There's something fuller there than the wish itself, but the presence to what is being wished to.
Thank you so much for bringing that in. That's my experience as well. And this book is titled Purifying Practices. So it's kind of both and. When you begin with just, and everything is, you know, you haven't quite, you know there's something there. You know that full knowledge is there, but you haven't integrated it kind of as a presence. Then the form is helpful of the wishing. It reinforces the wishing. And even when you do, as you say beautifully, when that presence is already there, then, and if the wish comes to you, but it doesn't necessarily have to, I think you would agree, right? The wish doesn't even have to be articulated in the mind, but it's a real embodied. The other thing you point to, which I actually was going to talk about this afternoon and may still touch on that, is that this book particularly is a lot about mindful attention. So mindfulness in the sense of awareness without language, before the concepts, but that kind of that metacognitive, if you will, awareness that moves through seeing, hearing, noticing everything that's arising. Oh, that's beautiful, Mado. Thank you so much. Perhaps you have more.
Tomorrow.
All right.
Tomorrow. Preview of coming attractions.
Thank you. I wanted to circle back to for a moment to what Taizan brought in, and the power of looking at the difficult, and doing this practice that he brought in of that's so counterintuitive, of really just trying out what it is to look at one's own suffering. Because when you're in your car, at least this is my experience, been driving has been a big practice area for me as well, living in California. And when you're in your own car, it's not like your thought is going to get through all the metal to anybody else, you idiot, you, or worse. But to turn it into you and to really take on the let's just try this out. What is this? Thank you so much for bringing that in. Go.
Could I ask, what are your practices, Carolyn, like for, do you have a daily metta practice in particular, I'm wondering about everybody's too, and Paula and Chobun Jensen and all of us, Mado, everybody, Mahesh, John, Tom, Michael, what is our daily practice, Emmy? Because sometimes when we share what we do, I know for me, when I hear somebody else, I hadn't thought of that. Or I forgot that. That would be a kind of a good thing for me, kind of increasing the arsenal, the armor, whatever.
Well, thanks for opening things up in that way. I appreciate that. So I have actually done whole metta retreats many times, but not recently. But I have feel like, so now my metta practice arises with the circumstances. So particularly in this time, I know a few people who have very difficult illnesses or physical situations. So most of my metta practice is directed toward them, And it's not so much a form as more like what Mado alluded to. It's not like, okay, I'm doing the metta practice, right? Sitting down and doing the metta practice right now. It's like, I think of them during the day, the thoughts of them arise spontaneously, and I do practice for them every day. So I guess I do have a form of, I am going to remember to, that's in the back somehow, but I don't consciously remind myself. So that's what I'm doing presently. One metta gets in you, it doesn't go, it tends to stick around. And I want to second Taizan's invitation to anyone who wishes to share any practices like this of well-wishing in any form that you have found helpful.
Hello, this is Paula. I vowed not to say anything, but at least I will be very brief. I've been talking too much. I find that the metta practice I don't have it as a daily practice, and I think I will now that I've done it. I have learned it, and I use it in situations. Just going around the block, when I'm taking my walks. And but this morning, I was thinking of the book we read yesterday, thinking maybe we would talk about that book, which we are, right? So, but I had just printed out the next one and I had also read that. But anyway, I am since the pandemic, all my tendencies toward self-criticism have really increased, and along with my self-forgiveness, I hope not even like I have to be forgiven, but by anyone in particular. But I circled ones that, whoa, you know, it's like, okay, remember this, let it go, let, you know, when you see this coming up and you're sitting, that's a sign for metta. And, you know, one ray of light following that, and opening up, and that seems like skillful means as I go into it's my daily practice of zazen, and of course that's all part of it anyway. So good wishes for everyone. That's how I feel. And to you, Carolyn. And to Angie. Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. Michael.
Yes, I don't have this. Thank you for your talk. It was very accessible. I could follow things. It was quite good. I don't like go around thinking, you know, loving kindness thoughts. But what I think of is, you know, I live in a quite a different area than most of you do. Maybe more like Medio lives, you know, there's a lot of conservatism. There's a lot of what they call red state up here. But what I do is I'm conscious all the time that these people are me, you know, that if I take my character defect, so to speak, to the extreme in different directions, perhaps in hate and prejudice and fear, then I'm them. I've become them. I mean, all these people are just like me. There's no such thing as a red state and a blue state. And you know, we're all capable of all the things that we see. So if I'm angry at someone for their, you know, they're conservative, they're carrying a gun and all this, then I'm angry at myself. And I'm really conscious of that because I'm surrounded by it. You know, I'm surrounded. It's quite different. It's quite interesting. But, you know, I just make it a practice when I'm out to consciously acknowledge people, no matter who they are, you know. And to understand that, you know, we're not different. You know, we're not different. Some people just aren't as awakened or aren't thinking, or, you know, it's a hard world right now here. And there's a lot of fear and a lot of chaos. But they're just like me. You know, they're just like me. Even Donald Trump is just like me, you know? I mean, much as we despise this and we like to talk about the man's evil, the man's not any more evil than anyone else. He's just allowed free rein to behaviors that many of us regulate, you know? I'm not sure exactly what the word is. He's just a human like the rest of us, you know? And I really don't like the blue and red state because it just puts these horrible divisions and just creates strife. So that's kind of my my take on a metta practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. That's really a powerful, powerful practice. It really is, of seeing through the separation, seeing the unity, the interdependence. Powerful. So metta is just a way. There are many practices, and well, Buddha left many, but that's a fundamental one. What you do, causes and conditions, your circumstances allow you a certain, you into that. Some of us who live in the bubble, we need you know, we need to work on that a little bit, but thank you. John.
Just something that occurs to me. I'm not as well practiced, certainly as many of you are, and certainly as you are, Carolyn.
John, I can hardly hear you.
But I do have occasions when I notice myself doing something that seems right, that seems in line with metta practice. An example of that would be like Paizan mentioned, when I do the unexpected instead of being angry or resentful of someone, I do something generous or manifesting love and compassion to them. And when I notice myself doing that, it's like an aha, that's it. I just did something worth noticing, worth my noticing. I'm not calling other people's attention to it, and I'm not just patting myself on the back, but I find that noticing that reinforces that kind of behavior subsequently for me. It's helpful on my path of developing further that practice ability. So I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, John. I think you put your finger on your awareness of a very important point about these practices that take us into deeper knowledge. And that is the awareness. This is like having these little kenshos, these little aha moments of that go to the deeper level. They're not the self is not involved. Buddha in the early sutra collections, suttas of the Pali Canon, talks about that in one called cultivating the wholesome. So being aware, being mindful, noticing that one has a thought, whether it's a wholesome thought or an unwholesome thought, is a key practice. And that is, so when you notice the wholesome, Buddha says in the early sutta, noticing a wholesome thought, cultivate that for thoughts, and for thoughts give rise to actions. You know, and letting it go, as someone mentioned that phrase, letting go of Paula did, of the unwholesome. Notice it and let it vanish. Don't dwell on it and don't beat yourself up about it. This is sort of an extrapolation from later, but so very, very useful to notice. Thank you. Oh, welcome. Pamela has joined us.
I've been here. Maybe you just couldn't see me.
I didn't see you at all, your name.
I wanted to say that thank you for all these observations and insights. That metta comes up for me both in acknowledging pain and suffering, which is where it's, you know, forefront usually, but also with joy. That, you know, the sound of pain, either my response or seeing someone else in pain, is the thing that pops it into the moment for me, metta. But also joy, that when I experience joy, and looking at your faces sometimes, I have this experience of joy, and let all beings have this. That's the way that comes to me as well. They seem to be together for me, that that they're not separate either, the suffering and the joy. And the other piece that I'm interested in is, you know, when I recognize suffering in someone else, I usually, you know, see it here. That's how it becomes embodied, I guess. And I always, I can't say that I'm an expert at just saying, oh, let that baby go. I don't think it's that easy for me. I usually have to ask, who is suffering? Who is this suffering? Not that it tells me a whole story necessarily, but it does seem to identify a place of suffering that then I can work to let go of. I wish I could do it right off the top, Paula.
No.
Later, maybe later I'll grow up even that far.
I don't know.
But for me, it's simply looking at who it is. Who is that? And when I can not necessarily find the person, I don't know how to speak about this, I'm not doing very well, but when I can identify the feeling associated with that suffering, then it's gone. Then it's just gone. Yeah. That's metta in Los Olivos today.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a process. It's all about where we are and going through different times and how the times come together too at a certain point. Anyway, thank you for identifying, for saying so clearly what your way of experiencing is at this particular time.
I wanted to share, recently I read this book, like Instructions to the Cook by Uchi, like Dogen's translation by Uchi Amaroshi. That had, the summary as I understood is like living your life with equanimity, compassion and attentiveness. So equanimity in the sense, like whatever comes up in your life, whether you want to talk, like accepting it fully, like there's certain things that you don't want in your life that come that you want them to be, you're wishing them to be away. And there's certain things that you want, which are not there. So, you know, in all of these cases, like really like whatever life gives to you, like truly act, trying to accept, that's one thing. And second is like a parental love towards all things and all people, really taking care of what are you're doing at the moment. Third one is being attentive in this entire thing, not getting lost in thought, but really attending to the moment. So I think this, after reading that, I'm trying to apply this to my daily life. Like it is like taking the practice to the daily life. So whatever I do, trying to not get lost in thought, but then really doing what I'm doing then, whether it is like making breakfast or washing dishes or like doing my work. I think that basically I see that really is helping me. And it's like taking my practice to my regular life. Yeah, that's one thing I want to share.
Thank you, Mahesh. I see we're at the end of our session, and maybe Emmy, you have a way we close out. I haven't, not sure what that is.
I don't remember doing the opening gatha, but we could do the closing gatha, which comes to mind, which I would go get the chant book because I don't know it by heart. Or we could maybe come up with our own meta for the morning.
That sounds like a great idea. We could each say that to ourselves and be on mute, or I actually recommend that. I recommend that people, when I have taken metta retreats, there are standard phrases, and I have been encouraged by my teachers to come up with my own ways, and that changes over time, depending on life. So if you know any metta phrases, or just picking up, wishing any one of these, wishing that all beings attain the supreme teaching and realize the way of enlightenment, or anything that you feel is well wishing, I think that would be good. I like that idea. And I will say mine silently too, so everyone has the freedom of mind to not follow along.
Nico, maybe you could give us the time. I don't have any time reference, or Carolyn, or
it's 11:02.
Okay, so maybe in a little while you could ring us back or something. Why we?
Let's say maybe 2 minutes for metta, and then just the simple phrases. Usually they're four, so 2 minutes for that, and then we can bow. I have time. I will bow.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.